This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of 2 Kings. Now, here's Pastor Sandy in the book of 2 Kings chapter 15 with today's edition of Sandy Adams Radio.
One of the most influential paintings of all time was Michelangelo's The Last Judgment. It covers the wall behind the altar at the Vatican's Sistine Chapel. This painting took Michelangelo 6 years to complete. When it was unveiled, it caused all of Europe to tremble. The painting pictures Jesus judging the wicked and sending them off into damnation. Some of the painting's elements are unbiblical, but its impact was undeniable. For this masterpiece, when it was unveiled, it sent a shockwave all across Europe. The masterpiece ingrained God's judgment in the hearts and minds of Europeans. It literally convicted the conscience of a continent. Well, tonight we also come to a picture of God's judgment. We'll observe the fall of the northern kingdom of Israel, and it should also shake us up. It should send a shockwave over you and me. For like the people of old, God's people, you and I have also been chosen by Him and blessed by Him. And yet we need to know that God's blessing doesn't immunize us from God's judgment. God is rich in mercy. God is generous in grace. God is plentiful in patience. But when His people persist in their sin, God has no other choice but to judge the wicked. For 200 years, God was patient with the northern kingdom of Israel in hopes that they would repent. 19 kings ruled over Israel, and yet tragically, each one of those 19 kings led the people into idolatry. Repentance never occurred. God's judgment was inevitable. And tonight we're going to witness the decline, the final years, and the fall of the northern kingdom of Israel. Before we dive in, though, let's get the global picture. The date was 790 BC, and a great kingdom, a military juggernaut, was growing northeast of Israel on the Euphrates River. The Assyrian Empire was on the rise, and their spread preoccupied Israel's northern adversary, the Syrians. This afforded Israel a final period of prosperity, enjoyed by King Joash, by his successor, King Jeroboam II. This was sort of a final reprieve. It was the calm before the storm. One last period of God's blessing before God's judgment. And during this time, God sent a wave of prophets to warn Israel of this coming judgment. We'll read later the book of Joel, and the book of Jonah, and the book of Hosea, and the book of Amos. This flurry of prophetic activity was God's final call to Israel. After the death of Jeroboam II, the northern kingdom was plunged into a 30-year period of chaos and confusion, which ends with their conquest, the infamous date, 722 BC. The instability of the north was framed by the stability enjoyed in the south. For the king of Judah, the southern kingdom, was a man named Azariah, or we call him Uzziah. He reigned for 52 years. So while this one king, Azariah, is sitting on the throne in Judah, Israel to the north experiences a run of 6 different kings. The instability weakened Israel, and it made her easy prey for the Assyrians. Well, chapter 15 gets us up to speed. In the 27th year of Jeroboam, king of Israel, Azariah, the son of Amaziah, king of Judah, became king. As I mentioned, this king was more commonly known as Uzziah. In verse 13, in fact, it refers to him as Uzziah. Azariah, or Uzziah, was one of Judah's 8 good kings. There were about 20 kings that reigned over Judah. 8 of them were good. 19 kings reigned over Israel. None of them were good. They were all wicked kings. Well, this man was 16 years old when he became king, and he reigned 52 years in Jerusalem. And his mother's name was Jechaliah of Jerusalem. And of course, today is Mother's Day, and so it's fitting that his mother gets mentioned in our text. Jechaliah. I'm sure we have every good king. There is a mom who taught him God's ways, who trained him to rule wisely. Notice Uzziah was 16 years old when he became king. Imagine getting your driver's license and taking the throne the very same year. I do know this, when a 16-year-old gets his driver's license, he feels like he's king of the road. That's for sure. Well, 792 BC was a big year for Uzziah. And he did what was right in the sight of the Lord according to all that his father Amaziah had done, except that the high places were not removed. The people still sacrificed and burned incense on the high places. And this was not the only mistake that King Uzziah made. 2 Chronicles chapter 22, verse 16 tells us, when he was strong, his heart was lifted up, or he became proud, to his destruction. For he transgressed against the Lord his God by entering the temple of the Lord to burn incense on the altar of incense. You see, Uzziah became proud. He was no longer content to be king, and so he also wanted to be priest. He wanted to offer the incense on the altar. Remember, under God's law, there was a strict separation between church and state. The king was never supposed to be priest. The king was king, the priest was priest, but Uzziah considered himself above God's law, and he wanted to be both. In the colonial days of America, there was a great debate among those early colonists. The British loyalists, they spoke of rex lex. In other words, the king is law. The patriots, those revolutionaries, they spoke of lex rex. The law is king. Well, which is it? Is the king the law, or is the law the king? Well, God weighs in on the subject in verse 5. Then the Lord struck the king so that he was a leper until the day of his death. And so he dwelt in an isolated house. I think God made his point. Uriah lived the rest of his life under quarantine. He became a victim of that dreaded disease of leprosy. Because of his pride, he ended up being neither priest nor king. Evidently, as far as God is concerned, his law always trumps the king. We're told in Jotham, the king's son was over the royal house judging the people of the land. His son had to take over the royal duties from a rebellious dad. Now the rest of the acts of Azariah or Uzziah and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Judah? So Azariah rested with his fathers, and they buried him with his fathers in the city of David. Then Jotham, his son, reigned in his place. Now verses 8 through 31 document the chaos that was occurring in the northern kingdom while Uzziah was on the throne in Judah. Tragically, but expectedly, Israel's final days were marked by treachery, by murder, by treason, by anarchy, by assassination. In the 38th year of Azariah, king of Judah, Zechariah, the son of Jeroboam, reigned over Israel in the capital city, Samaria, 6 months. All he lasted was 6 months, half a year. And he did evil in the sight of the Lord, as his fathers had done. He did not depart from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who had made Israel sin. Then Shalom, the son of Jabesh, conspired against him and struck and killed him in front of the people, and he reigned in his place. Now Jeroboam the second successor, in a public place, in front of the people, there was no shame. Now the rest of the acts of Zechariah, indeed they are written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel. This was the word of the Lord which he spoke to Jehu, saying, your son shall sit on the throne of Israel to the fourth generation. And so it was. You remember back in 2 Kings chapter 10, verse 30, God had promised Jehu, because he had been faithful to judge the house of Ahab, that his heir would sit on the throne of Israel until the fourth generation. And now Zechariah is the fourth generation from Jehu, and thus the final king of Jehu's dynasty. Well, verse 13 tells us of Zechariah's assassination. Shallum, the son of Jabesh, became king in the 39th year of Uzziah, king of Judah, and he reigned a full month in Samaria. This guy manages to sit on the throne a total of 30 days. Obviously, he didn't come to power with a groundswell of support. For Menachem, the son of Gadai, went up to Tisra, came to Samaria, and struck Shallum, the son of Jabesh, in Samaria, and killed him, and he reigned in his place. These kings of Israel are toppling like dominoes. Israel is going through monarchs like the University of Alabama goes through football coaches, one after the other. Actually, Josephus said that Shallum was supposedly Zechariah's friend. Thus, he was betrayed by his friend. This Menachem was his general. And so when Menachem heard of Shallum's treachery, took him 30 days to get the news, he came to Samaria to take vengeance. And Menachem killed Shallum and took the throne for himself. Now, the rest of the acts of Shallum and the conspiracy which he led, indeed, are they written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel. Then from Tirzah, Menachem attacked Tipsah and all who were there in its territory because they did not surrender. Therefore, he attacked it. And all the women there who were with child, he ripped open. Obviously, this Menachem was not a nice guy. He was a military general by trade. And thus, he was short on diplomacy, prone to violence and vindictiveness. This is a horrible act that he committed on the citizens of this town. Now, in the 39th year of Azariah, king of Judah, Menachem, the son of Gadai, became king over Israel and reigned 10 years in Samaria. And he did evil in the sight of the Lord. He did not depart all his days from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who had made Israel sin. And it was in the reign of this king, Menachem, this man known for his violence, this man who ripped open the wounds of the pregnant women and killed the babies, this horrible, terrible, brutal ruler. It was in the days of his reign that suddenly the most ruthless people in history appear on the scene. Pul, king of Assyria, came against the land. The Assyrian army turned savagery and butchery into an art form. There have never been a more vile and violent people than the Assyrians. They made this Menachem seem gentle. This Pul was also known by the secular historians as Tiglath-Pileser III. One historian calls him one of the most successful military commanders in world history, conquering most of the world known to the ancient Assyrians. It's interesting, this is the first mention in the scriptures of the Assyrians, which is strange since they have now been a world power for some 150 years at this point in history. Some believe their absence as a threat to Israel was the result of something we hear about and study about all the time, the story of Jonah. Jonah's ministry to Nineveh, which was the capital of Assyria. You remember Jonah's time in the belly of the great fish convinced him that it was time to heed the call of God. God told him to call to Nineveh. He went to Tarshish, which is in the opposite direction. God said, go left. Jonah went right, and of course, God intercepted him. He was thrown off the ship, and a fish swallowed him, and Jonah had a chance to chew on this for a few days. Until finally, God caused the fish to spit him up on the beach, and he made his way to Nineveh, and there he preached. Jonah journeyed to this Gentile city, and boy, did Jonah hate the Assyrians. He hated these Gentiles. Nevertheless, he obeyed God, and he preached a message of repentance. And to Jonah's surprise, I might add, even his dismay, Nineveh heard his message and repented of their sin. They turned away from their idols, and they turned to the one true God, the God of Israel. And it could be that the next few Assyrian leaders were reluctant to invade Israel because of their remembrance of Jonah's ministry. This Pul, though, obviously has forgotten Jonah, for he shows no such inhibition. He attacks the northern kingdom. And Menachem gave Pul 1,000 talents of silver. that his hand might be with him to strengthen the kingdom under his control. In other words, he pays a ransom. He tries to buy off this army. And he gets his money by taxing the people. Menachem exacted the money from Israel from all the very wealthy, from each man 50 shekels of silver to give to the king of Assyria. So the king of Assyria turned back and did not stay there in the land. But Israel has not seen the last of the Assyrians and of Tiglath-Pileser. Now the rest of the acts of Menachem and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Israel? So Menachem rested with his fathers. Then Pekahiah, his son, reigned in his place. Verse 23. In the 50th year of Azariah, king of Judah, Pekahiah, the son of Menachem, became king over Israel in Samaria. And he reigned 2 years. And he did evil in the sight of the Lord. He did not depart from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who had made Israel sin. Then Pekah, the son of Remaliah, an officer of his, conspired against him and killed him in Samaria in the citadel of the king's house, along with Argob and Ariah, his accomplices, and with him were 50 men of Gilead. He killed him and reigned in his place. It's dangerous to be the king of Israel. Everybody's trying to knock off the king. Now the rest of the acts of Pekahiah and all that he did, indeed, they are written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Israel in the 52nd and final year of Azariah, or Uzziah, king of Judah. Pekah, the son of Remaliah, became king over Israel and Samaria, and he reigned 20 years. And he did evil in the sight of the Lord. He did not depart from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who he had made Israel sin. And how many times will we read this about the sin of Jeroboam? 19 times, in fact. We read, he made Israel sin. You remember, Jeroboam was the first of Israel's kings. And this man left a sad legacy that Israel was never able to overcome. You remember what his sin was? Jeroboam's sin was a subtle form of idolatry. You see, he didn't want his people going down to Jerusalem to the temple to worship there. If they did, he felt like that they would gravitate back to Judah, and therefore, you know, they wouldn't remain in his northern kingdom that he had broken off from Judah. And so he came up with an alternative religion. He erected golden calves in Dan and in Bethel. And understand, in his mind, these were not replacements for God. These were representations of God. Perhaps they were the living creatures in heaven. They were a form of idolatry. They were graven images. They were representations of God. In essence, the sin of Jeroboam was not so much a violation of the first commandment, thou shalt have no other gods. It was a violation of the second commandment, that you can't worship God through carved or graven images. The problem, though, is that a violation of the second commandment most often will lead to a violation of the first. Jeroboam, he worshiped God, but not in the way that God desired to be worshiped. Jeroboam's religion was his own invention, one that was convenient, but one that was not faithful. And sadly, all 19 of his predecessors, or 18 of his predecessors, they followed in his footsteps. They promoted the sin of Jeroboam. And in the end, the corrupt worship of Jeroboam was the primary reason that God judged the northern kingdom of Israel. What's the lesson for us? Let's make sure we worship God in the way he wants to be worshiped, not just in the way that's convenient for us. Let's make sure that our worship obeys God, not just appeases me. Well, verse 29 tells us, in the days of Pekah, king of Israel, Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, came and took Eon, Abel-Beth-Maacah, Genoa, Kedesh, Hazar, Gilead, and Galilee, all the land of Naphtali, and he carried them captive to Assyria. The Assyrians attacked the border towns, and they took their inhabitants prisoner. And it was the beginning of the end for this northern kingdom of Israel. Then Hoshea, the son of Elah, led a conspiracy against Pekah, the son of Remaliah, and struck him and killed him. So he reigned in his place in the 20th year of Jotham, the son of Uzziah. Now the rest of the acts of Pekah and all that he did, indeed, they are written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Israel. Hoshea will reign 9 more years, but he is the last of Israel's kings. Now in Judah, the death of Uzziah was followed by the reign of his son, Jotham. Jotham, too, was a good and godly king. He reigned 16 years in Jerusalem. But notice the reoccurring problem for Jotham. 2 Kings 15, verse 35 reads, "However, the high places were not removed." And this is the omission that eventually bites Judah and this king, Jotham. The rest of the chapter takes us south to the reign of Jotham, Uzziah's successor, verse 32. In the second year of Pekah, the son of Remaliah, the king of Israel, Jotham, the son of Uzziah, king of Judah, began to reign. He was 25 years old when he became king, and he reigned 16 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Jerusha. And on Mother's Day, isn't it great to see these mothers mentioned here in the scriptures? The daughter of Zadok, and he did what was right in the sight of the Lord. He did according to all that his father Uzziah had done. All these other guys who were evil, their mothers never get mentioned. Apparently they weren't doing a very good job. But the good kings, they get their mothers mentioned. However, the high places were not removed. The people still sacrificed and burned incense on the high places. He built the upper gate of the house of the Lord. These high places were altars where idolatry could be practiced. Not necessarily where it was practiced, but where it could be practiced. You see, God centralized worship among his people. Everyone was required to worship at the temple. This is why the sin of Jeroboam was so diabolical, because Jeroboam refused to let the people of the north go south to worship at the temple. He kept them within their confines and invented this false religion for them. But God's plan was for everyone to go to Jerusalem and to worship together. You were not supposed to erect your own altar or your own high place, an elevated platform that would perhaps hold an idol. These were outlawed. Worship was to remain pure. And yet, even when the Jews went to the temple, they still liked to hold on to their high places, their little private altars. They didn't bow to the idol necessarily, but for some reason, they always liked to polish the idol's pedestal. And I think there's an equivalent in our lives. It happens subtly. Though I promise God that I'm going to serve him, though I promise God he's the only one to whom I'm going to give my life and my allegiance, nevertheless, I tend to want to leave some options open. Oh, I want to follow God, but I don't necessarily want to burn my contacts with the world. I don't want to cut off my supply lines to sin. I want to kind of keep sin within reach, just in case I want to go back at some point. In other words, I've taken down my idol, but oh my, I'm still maintaining my pedestal. I've gotten rid of the idols, but I still am holding on to the high places. It's a sin that eventually leads to compromise. And that's why God says, get rid of the high places. Now the rest of the acts of Jotham and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Judah? In those days the Lord began to send Rezin, king of Syria, and Pekah, the son of Remaliah, against Judah. So Jotham rested with his fathers and was buried with his fathers in the city of David, his father. Then Ahaz, his son, reigned in his place.
You've been listening to Sandy Adams Radio with our pastor and teacher, Sandy Adams, here at Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is working his way through the book of 2 Kings, verse by verse, chapter by chapter. Within this book, you hear about the continuation of the divided kingdom of Israel. It wasn't ideal in any way. The kings and the people at that time dove further and further into idolatry, straying away from the one true God. God used his prophets during these years to try to draw the people back to himself. But in more cases than not, the people ignored and disregarded the prophets he'd send to speak to the nation. Mankind can be stubborn and rebellious left to themselves. They needed an intervention that was greater than what a human king could bring. If you'd like to hear more messages like this one, head over to sandyadams.org. Once again, that's sandyadams.org. While you're there, check out Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain under the About tab. If you're in the Atlanta area, why not come visit us? We have services at 9:15 and 11:15 a.m. There's more information and directions at sandyadams.org. Well, that's all we have time for today, but we look forward to continuing this study with you in the book of 2 Kings. Pastor Sandy has more to share with you here on Sandy Adams Radio.